This is the RX Power Hour with your hosts, Nathan Tate and Ryan Briswell.
Welcome to the RX Power Hour on RXMuscle.com with your hosts, Nathan Payton and Ryan Bracewell. Tonight's special guest is 2010 World's Strongest Man competitor and pro strongman Jason Bergman. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, guys.
How was, have you recovered from the Super Bowl celebrations? I believe you to be a Wisconsin resident.
Yeah, people are pretty crazy up here. I'm a fan, but I'm not that big of a fan. I know I'm going to probably catch shit for that.
I think you're only going to catch shit if you declare yourself a Bears fan.
Yeah, I mean, I like watching it, but honestly, I'd rather be playing a sport. I mean, that's why I do strongman, so.
Good point. Well, we're catching you at a good time this evening. You all ready to do our interview?
Yeah. No, I'm all set. I've got all my food down, and so.
Excellent. That's always the most important thing, winding down the day.
Yeah,
now, Jason, I know that you started out basically talking about food. I know that you started out kind of considering going into bodybuilding way before strongman. And I believe you even mentioned that you went a few weeks into the diet and decided, whoa, this bodybuilding thing, these guys are crazy. Forget this. How did you end up actually into strongman?
Yeah, I mean, I thought about it once because I had a lot of friends that were in it, and of course, I'm a personal trainer, so I'm in the fitness industry quite a bit already. I got out about 6 weeks out of the show because I was down at Purdue going to grad school, and I was going to do the Indiana show down there. And about 6 weeks out, I just said, "This is, you know, nuts. I can't, you know, the dieting, the cramping up, you know, and then all the other stuff." I was like, "I got to find something that suits me better." Because I like to eat. I can't stand, you know, eating that clean. So I tried it, and I said, nope, not for me. And then I got into strongman, I think, a couple years after that.
Now, Jason, you stay pretty lean. I mean, every time I've ever seen a picture of you or seen you on TV, I mean, you're already, I would guess, at around 10% or lower. I mean, so what is the difference now between how lean you are and trying to diet down for a bodybuilding show for you?
Really, honestly, my metabolism is pretty high. I'm on my feet all day, so for me to gain weight is a real pain in the butt. I have to really overeat, and I always usually eat clean, trying to eat a lot of crap food just never works with my digestive system, but I got down to about 5% for that show I was going to supposedly do, and I said, nah. But I always have been around, you know, 8 to 10% most of the time. Even when I put weight on, I maybe go up a couple percent. But for me, the biggest battle has actually been putting weight on. I stay around 270, 275, and I just try to get stronger.
and you're only 5'10", is that correct?
Yeah, 5'10", 5'10 and a half, something like that. I wish I was 6 foot, but, you know.
Well, I mean, 5'10 at a lean 270, I mean, that's a lot of muscle mass.
Big guy. Right.
You must eat if you have a fast metabolism, I mean, what kind of diet are you doing? Or I've read somewhere where you said you don't really follow a diet, but what kind of foods are you eating to maintain that kind of weight?
Just your basics. I mean, I break it down. The proteins, it's either chicken, ground turkey, beef. I have the luxury of my parents own a dairy and beef farm, so I get a lot of you know, steaks and ground beef whenever I want it, or I get it really cheap. So those protein sources, eggs, I go on and off with those because I get sick of them after, you know, so many months.
Right.
And then basic carb sources really for me are, I actually do eat a lot of, like, red potatoes. I just bake them, put some, I think, what do I use? Not olive oil, I use grapeseed oil and some seasonings. And then some rice, I get sick of that every now and then. And for me, that works. I know a lot of guys go with, like, sweet potatoes and stuff. I've tried that, but for me, the potatoes, red potatoes work the best. And then pastas, a lot of whole wheat pastas. And I just try and have 3 to 4 solid meals a day and 2 or 3 calorie shakes or gaining shakes a day as well. Other than that, you know, I drink a couple gallons of milk a week, a lot of oatmeal for breakfast, and usually casein protein at night. And really, I don't screw around too much with regular protein. I always have gaining, like mass gaining shakes throughout the day because I need the calories.
Right.
So, and peanut butter is my best friend.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly. Peanut butter, yeah. A little olive oil goes a long way. Good call.
Yep.
As you can, talking about growing up on that dairy farm, I mean, again, I'm from the country myself. Do you feel that that ended up helping prepare you for your strongman career in the long run?
Yeah, I definitely think growing up on a farm helped me and my brothers actually a lot because, you know, genetics-wise, my dad, he's very strong, but he's not the biggest guy. He actually ran cross country and wrestled in high school. And my mom, you know, she wasn't really, you know, big or anything in that. She was a farm girl. So I think us growing up on a farm, having to do chores at an early age and lifting stuff and being very competitive with my brothers,
right,
you know, made us get a lot stronger, a lot faster. And we all picked up, you know, weightlifting. We all did powerlifting in high school, so that definitely helped set a good foundation.
Now, when you were in high school and you were doing, you said you did powerlifting. Were you pretty up there? I mean, were you one of the elite lifters? I mean, did you have that genetic build from the get go?
Yeah. I mean, in high school, I started out. I think started lifting in my sophomore year. I competed in my junior and senior year. And I picked it. I mean, I got obsessed with it real quick. I think I placed like seventh in state my junior year, and then I went and won nationals in the 198s my senior year. I think I added like 500 pounds to my total in a year, something like that. So, I mean, I learned from an early on how to lift right and how to really, you know, push myself and not push myself so hard I'd get hurt. And I never missed a lifting session. I mean, I love deadlifting. I love squatting. I used to love bench pressing, but, you know, I tore my pec a couple years ago, so I don't do that too much anymore. So, but overall, yeah, it was, that helped a lot because I really wish I would have stayed with powerlifting, after high school. I still lifted, but I didn't powerlift. And I mean, I was 17, and I had the record. I think I deadlifted 635 to 198, and I was like, man, if I would have kept up with that, my deadlift would have been a lot better right now.
Well, it's not like you have a bad deadlift. I think I saw online you doing, what, this was a year ago almost, you did 830 plus however many pounds of chains on top of it, and I don't even think you had a spawn when you were working out with Brian Shaw and Dave Oslin.
Yeah, I mean, I look at, like, you know, from when I was in high school at 17 to when I started, I was like 26, I think, in strongman. My deadlift was like around 700 when I started strongman, what, 6 years ago? So I was like, there was a good almost 10 years I could have been working on it to get it higher. But, you know, it's pretty decent right now. I actually have to work on trying to catch up to the rest of the guys because it seems like everyone's getting better at deadlifting right now, so.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more 800-plus pound pullers in strongman right now than I think there ever has been.
Oh, yeah. When I started, I mean, there was
like
that
many. At least
I
in
mean,
America,
now,
you can be a pro pretty much without an 800 pull.
Yeah. I mean, it's progressing fast, and if you're not progressing with them, you're going to be left at the side pretty quick.
Jason, I've actually heard you talk about some of your best training. You've actually referenced, again, back on the dairy farm, that old shed that apparently you built out there that didn't have AC or heating or anything, and you mentioned it being over 100 in the summer and below zero in the winter. What else do you have in there, and how did you make that work for you?
Well, in the winter, you know, you wear a couple sweatshirts. We actually had like a, what the hell, those turbo heaters that you run kerosene out of, we do that. I'd honestly run that to heat the bar up so my hands wouldn't freeze to it. Get that warm enough and then deadlift, you know, or squat or whatever. And but we've come a long way. I mean, I first started, my brothers got into it about 6 months, my older brother got into it, and then my younger brother got into it a couple years after. And now the shed, you know, we've got it insulated and paneled, and we've got a heater installed that runs off propane. And then we have, I think we've probably got one of the biggest collections of strongman equipment, God, I would say, in the country, pretty close. Because at first I just started building. You know, my brother works for a metal fab company.
Oh, that's perfect.
You know, I've got other friends that are training with me that do that. You know, we've had to actually store about half of our equipment because it doesn't all fit in the shed anymore. So, I mean, I even went crazy with stones. I've got like 22 stones I've made in the last 5 years, I think.
Oh, man.
And 19 of them are over 300, I think. Yeah, because I didn't want any baby stones.
Now, speaking of some of the friends that you train with, you know, I've seen some videos where you're training with Brian Shaw, Dave Oslin, Matt Winnott. I don't know how to say his last name.
Yep.
I know who he is.
Winnott.
Okay. And, you know, is this something y'all do on a regular basis? I know y'all all don't live in the same city, or is that just kind of a special occasion thing?
Usually, you know, I've been training with Dave ever since I turned pro, because he's in Minnesota. It's about a four-hour drive for me. And Shaw, we've been starting to train more regular over the last couple of years. They were out to my place, I think, two or three times last summer. We all went to Denver for a week, and then we went to Dave's, too, for a week. So we trained pretty regular, me, Sean, and Austin. Pete Conrad and Matt Winnott, we used to train more, but I think I think Matt's just doing the Strongman Champions League once in a while. And he's traveling a lot for work, and Pete's been working on the new business that he's been working with. So I don't know if he's going to get back into it or not. But we used to usually have five or six pros train together, I would say, every month or every other month for a couple of years there. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's just from my own experience, it's definitely a lot better training session when you get multiple guys out there. Because I know where I live, you know, we have... you know, Andy Vincent, Travis Ortmeyer, Jim Glassman, you know, when I first started was competing still.
Yep.
Thigpen, you know, when he was into it. So, I mean, when you get two or three or all of us together, I mean, that training session, you end up hitting so many more PRs, it seems like, than if it's just you with a regular training partner or something like that. It just kind of really brings out the best in you.
Yeah, and with the, you know, sport of strongman, I don't really know anyone that just trains by themselves and is really good because, you know, as much as I love training, if it was just me, you know, I can't see myself motivating myself to do a max set of stones. You know, one, you need the people to help you with spotting and loading, but the other thing, you know, you need the other people there for the camaraderie, the, you know, the energy to push you. And honestly, the nice thing is we plan these things out, like, hopefully, like, a month, 2 months ahead. So if you've been slacking a little bit on your training, you know you got to pick it up because, you know, I'm like, oh, shit, Shaw's coming or Austin's coming or, you know, like, I can't be, you know, slacking off or they're going to notice and then I'm going to get heck for it. So.
Well, and beyond your, you know, your strongman community support, I mean, you're one of the guys that seems to have a lot of family support behind it. I mean, doesn't your entire family basically travel with you when you go to Worlds?
Yeah, I try not to let them come, but, you know how that works. yeah, I would honestly say, well, this year at Worlds, we definitely had the most. I think I had 10 or 12 people come with me, and that wasn't a cheap trip to South Africa. And I told them, I said, this is a lot of money, but they all, you know, they're like, well, when are we ever going to go to South Africa and let alone see you compete at Worlds? And I was like, okay, you know. So, and we make the shirts up. And of course, they actually love it, the TWI people, because they made comments directly to me that, you know, like, who's that loud person in the background? It's like, oh, that's my mom.
You know, I'd say the exact same thing because when my parents are able to, you know, because of work and stuff, my parents try to come to see some of the shows. And even though there's a whole crowd of people, I can always pick out my mom's voice, and it's still embarrassing, even though I know no one else is hearing it the same way I'm hearing it.
oh, yeah, you know, not when I was on TV, I was like, hear that? And she's like, what? And I'm like, that's you. She's like, I'm not that loud. I was like, yeah, you are. But it's good. I mean, they enjoy it. And it's definitely nice having the support there because, you know, when you're competing for almost 2 weeks, that's the hardest thing I would say about Worlds is the mental game. You know, you got to get ready for one event, maybe two that day. And then the rest of the day, you got to, you know, eat, take your supplements, rest, stretch, foam roll, you know, and if you need something, you don't want to have to go walk and get it, or if you need someone to roll you out, it's nice to have a bunch of people there to help you out.
What do you remember most about that contest?
About Worlds this year?
Yeah. What stands out for you the most?
Honestly, if I was talking about the events, the ones that stand out the most would have to be either the squat or the car hold. The car hold was probably the most surprising for me, just because I trained it maybe four times before we went to Worlds. I was at Brian's about a month before we left. I sucked at it. I was trying to figure out what the deal was. I think I went for 40 seconds with about the same weight. Dave kicked my butt and went like a minute. And then I was like, well, you know, I've got to figure out what my problem is. And then each week I kept adding about 5 seconds. So when I left, I'd held it for maybe a minute. And I was like, well, you know, if I can go minute five, minute 10, I should do well. And then contest came around, and honestly, I knew if the position I was in, if I won that car hold, I wouldn't have to worry about the medley coming after. So Brian Shaw actually was there on the side, and I told him, I should tell me when I'd beaten everyone else. And I couldn't hear him. I just thought he was saying, keep going, keep going. So I went until I literally couldn't hold on to it anymore. So I was surprised when I found out I held it for a minute, I think 27 something. So
now, when you look at the stuff that you had to do in the prelims, do you think that that prepares you well to get into the finals, or is it kind of almost like a totally separate contest that, from an athlete's perspective?
Well, this year, when you looked at the events in the prelims versus the finals, this was probably the events were probably the most different out of any world, because I looked at my prelims. I didn't have a single event, really, that was the same as the finals. I had a squat in the finals. We had a deadlift. You know, we had block press and then log press in the finals. You know, the only thing that was about the same, shoot, I don't even think, because we had barrels in the sand. That, I guess you could say, is the same as the stupid sandbags in the water.
That event looked horrible, by the way.
Yeah, that, you know, it didn't look as bad as it really was, but yeah, we had tire and anvils in the prelims for me, and then, you know, we didn't have either. So that was the biggest thing for me, was none of the events were the same. I was glad that in the semifinals I had events that, you know, I had trained well enough to be good at, and I knew the squat I would do well, because I've always been good at squatting. Deadlift has just been, for me, sometimes hit or miss. And the biggest thing for me is I went all out in the semifinals, because my goal was to make the finals. If I made the finals, I didn't care how I did. I just wanted to make them. Because the biggest thing for me was coming back after the chest tear and had surgery. To me, I needed to know I could make it back into the finals. So as soon as I made the finals, I took so much out of myself that, you know, if you watch the finals, you notice I didn't really have anything left.
Right. Absolutely.
And so I knew it would be a battle between the top three anyway, and I didn't really want to, you know, I wouldn't say I laid up, but I really didn't want to hurt myself again to the point where I'd have to go through another 6 months of rehab.
Oh.
Now, when you're at Worlds, I mean, you're built like an ox, but you're still one of the smallest guys out there. When you're competing against all these guys like Brian Shaw, who are, you know, 6'8", 400 pounds, do you feel like an underdog going up against some of these guys, or do you not really think about the fact that they're outweighing you by 100 pounds or more?
No. A lot of people ask me that, and I tell them, you know, honest to God, like when I compete, it's against myself. I know what I'm capable of, and if I do well, I'll hit a PR. If I don't do so well, it won't be a PR. Or if I have a little bit of a mistake, you know, it'll cost you. Because for me, it's always been about how strong can I get, not how big I can get. Because I knew I could never get, you know, I can't get any taller. And I didn't want to become one of those guys that sacrificed mobility and agility for extra weight. Because when I found out I can keep getting stronger, maybe gain 5 or 10 pounds at the most, that really, you know, helped me actually improve, because I struggled with it in the beginning. I was like, man, how am I going to beat these guys? They're huge, you know. But after competing with them for years, I realized that, you know, I can just become more efficient at the way I lift something, or I can get my technique better so I can lift just as much as they are.
What kind of things do you think helped you? You know, a lot of guys in strongman, you know, I've done it myself, is, you know, they start putting on weight and they will gain a ton of strength. I mean, I probably made my best gains when I went from 270 to 290, you know, 2 years ago. And, you know, every single lift, my overhead went up 50 pounds, my squat went up 150 pounds, my deadlift went up 100 pounds, you know, just from the combination of, you know, training right, but also that added weight. What kind of things, do you do anything different compared to some of the other guys that allows you to keep getting that strength while not putting on the weight?
Well, I mean, I originally did put weight on when I started strongman. I was only about 235, I think. My first, you know, amateur show, I was about, I think, 240, 245 as a heavyweight. You know, I definitely made a lot of improvements once I got up to around 270, 275. And then, the biggest thing is I use a lot of the psychological aspect, I guess you could say, the imagery. I visualize the events in my head. I visualize, you know, trying to get every last muscle fiber to contract when I'm doing something for max effort. If I'm doing something that's highly technical, I will literally videotape myself and watch, or I'll watch other people's form that's better than mine and try and, you know, mirror it or mimic it as best I can to where I can get as efficient as I can at lifting it, because I have to, because I can't gain that extra weight without sacrificing, like I said, you know, the mobility. Because with Worlds, you have to be able to move well with heavy loads. If it was the Arnold, a lot more static, then, yeah, I'd probably try and throw on, you know, 20 or 30 pounds and see what happens. But with World, you still have to be very strong statically, but then you also have to be able to move fast, because, you know, seconds, in tenths of seconds matter in the farmers and the yokes and everything.
And Jason, it's really important that you mention that, because form is so key with what you guys do, and especially when you've got such a huge, on the pro level even, such a huge variation between what the guy's weights. I mean, you might have a guy like yourself or Ortmeyer, you know, that come in, you know, 280s, 290s, and then you might have, you know, like Ryan had mentioned, you know, Shaw coming in over 400. But at the same time, like you mentioned, it all comes down to form. And for those guys out there working on, you know, trying to be the next Jason Bergman or Brian Shaw or you know, Poundstone or Ortmeyer, what have you, you know, don't get caught up in that. And if you pay that attention to that form, you'll see that that's really key, because leverage is everything. You know, what you might lack in a muscular contraction, if you will, you can make up, you know, threefold, you know, by leverage, you know, and compensating that and messing with the form and really dialing in where you're at. So I think that's a very important thing that you just mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to set the example on that, I guess you could say, in the sandbag carry in the finals. I knew if I could get the sandbag to my shoulder, I could go a lot faster than trying to front carry, because for me to carry 270 pounds in front of me, that's my whole body weight trying to carry in front of me, my posterior right. chain is going to just literally fry by the second bag. So I knew I had to do something different. And, you know, if I would have got that third one on my shoulder, I know I would have had a pretty good time, because I had the first two bags very fast. But
right, very quickly.
Water adds that extra element of not being able to grab onto something. And Ortmeyer proved it too. I mean, he came in a lot leaner than normal.
Right.
And he was just as strong. You know, you could notice maybe on a few events, but on everything else, he was just as good, if not better.
Yes.
Yeah, he's definitely gained some quickness. You know, he did lose. It's obvious he lost some brute strength, but it did seem like he got quicker the lighter he got.
Yeah, and then he was dealing with a foot injury, too. I mean, those last couple events, like the Stones, there was, you know, no way he was going to load them all with. You just saw his foot. It was just black and blue the whole way up and down. But he still did well, actually, on the deadlift. I think he was up there in the top. Yeah, the top five for sure. I think he got 8 or 9 reps.
Right.
On the guardhead. And, yeah, he weighed in because they make us, this is something I don't know if you guys know, they make all the finalists weigh in the day before we start competing. I don't know if they do that just to screw with people or if they do write the weights down. Because I'm like, I don't want to weigh myself because I know I lost weight and it's bad enough I'm already the lightest guy here.
Right.
So, yeah, I think Travis weighed in at like 285.
Well, and getting back to kind of, you were talking about, you know, some of your technique stuff and kind of preparing for this interview and just from things I've seen in the past, you know, every time I've seen you do a moving event, like a frame carry or a yoke or something of that nature, I don't know if it's just my imagination when I'm watching it, but it literally seems like you get faster the entire length of the course, whereas, you know, most guys, obviously, you speed up at the beginning when you first start, and then most guys kind of coast, you know, at a certain speed. But it mm-hmm. literally appears that you get faster and faster and faster until you drop the implement. Like in the Super Series in 09, you were going so fast, you literally had to jump over the frame at the end because you couldn't stop.
Yeah. That is actually something I don't know if I just did on purpose, but what I noticed with like yoke and farmers, and I mean, it bit me in the butt on the shield carry because I got too fast and couldn't control my balance. But my goal is always to accelerate because I found out that if I try and get going too fast on a yoke, I'll ditch it. Like I'll accidentally lock out my knee because I'll misstep or something like that. So my mentality the last couple of years is always little speed improvements the whole way through the course till I know I'm up to top speed. Because I, in my mind, I feel that I'll be faster than the guy that tries to just start going fast. And either he'll screw up and drop it or he'll run out of gas. Like my goal is just to constantly, little by little, just keep improving the speed. But at the same time, that allows me to keep the balance and to keep my hips underneath me, I guess you could say. And yeah, usually like when now the fun, like I like the events that Super Series has where it's 20 meters down, 20 meters back, because I work on that switchover on the yoke or on the farmers so that I'm not wasting any time where, you know, some guys will take 2 or 3 seconds to make sure their shoulders are underneath their just right. Like I'll practice that to get it so within a second or two I'm up and running again going the other way to make up time and then just keep on accelerating until I hit the finish.
Now, do you practice doing certain distances or lighter weights or heavier weights to perfect your form as far as that speed up, you know, so that you can maintain balance? I mean, do you keep it lighter, go heavier? Or?
Yeah. I mean, in the winter, I'm kind of limited because we've only got about 40 feet in our training facility. And we've tried it in the snow, and that's just not smart. we've slipped a few times, but in the summer or spring, you know, in summer, usually what I'll do, what I've noticed I can do is I'll go heavy on the if I'm going to yoke and farmers, I'll go heavy on the yoke and light on the farmers, and the next week I'll switch those two, because if I go heavy on both every week in, week out, I'll develop, you know, shin splints, or I'll develop a lot of pain in my hips. I'm just pounding the crap out of myself. And also what I'll do is I will go and set the course so that, you know, after about 15 to 20 feet, I want to be going as pretty fast, and then just gradually notch it up as much as I can. And we time ourselves, and I'll go lighter, and I'll shoot for a set time. Because at first, you know, some guys are like, oh, just go as fast as you can. I was like, no. You know, there's a limit until you get that technique down of how fast you can go. So I'll do it so that every couple weeks, when I'm not going heavy, if I go a little lighter, I'll shoot for, you know, say 15 seconds and 80 feet in the field, and then I'll try and shoot 14 a couple weeks later, and then 13, and keep shortening the time and going faster and faster and gradually bringing it up versus just trying to every week go as fast as I can, because I feel that, you know, there's a lot of technique to it, and it's something that your brain has to learn, and you have to just progressively make it so you can get little bit by little bit faster and faster. And that works, it seems to work very well for me.
Right. And in referencing the shin splints that you just did, a lot of guys bring that up as far as being something that, you know, be it the yoke or, you know, once the farmers start getting heavy, they start developing those shin splint issues. And you mentioned that you even encountered it at time to time, you know, along your way of perfecting what you do now. What is it that you did to basically combat that shin splint scenario as far as getting the shin splints to calm back down so that you could then continue back with your training?
What I found, you do the rest ice and all that fun stuff. But the biggest thing I found is whenever I tried to go top speed with stuff for too many weeks in a row is when I get shin splints. So that's kind of where I developed the, you know, go light and fast and then heavy and slow back and forth on the weeks. Or what I actually would keep track of all this stuff. I mean, the one thing guys should be doing is writing down everything. If you're not writing down your workouts, and you wonder why you didn't do well at the next show you do, that's the problem right there. I mean, I've got a little bit of an OCD when it comes to that. Because I can look back, you know, the last 6 years, and I've got it all written down. And I found that when I went past, I tried to do 80 feet with the yoke faster than 15 seconds for too many weeks in a row, I would get shin splints. So what I did is I found out that if I did that every other week, I wouldn't get them. Same thing with the farmers. And I think a lot of people maybe get shin splints too if you're in the northern country like we are. You go from shorter runs to long runs when the snow melts and you don't give your shins enough time to adapt, you're going to get them, just like runners do. If you don't, you know, you're going to get tendonitis as well if you don't give yourself enough time to adapt. So That's kind of what I did.
Jason, we have a pretty good audience of amateur strongmen, you know, some pro guys listen, and then we also have a lot of powerlifters. Can you give us a basic layout of how you do your workouts, you know, whether it be in the, what I call in the gym lifts, and then how you arrange your strongman stuff around that?
Yeah, I can give you an idea. It honestly changes all the time. But my basics are I try and squat and deadlift once a week. Monday and Thursdays have worked the best. Depending on what events are coming up or what contest will dictate if I squat on Monday or if I deadlift on Monday. And then I usually press overheads and chest, you know, and shoulders and tries on Tuesday. Depending on the workout and the contest, I'll maybe do upper back on Wednesday and then the other big lift on Thursday. Take Friday off and then usually we do events Saturday. Usually 4 or 5 events takes about 3 or 4 hours. But we've been playing around with that this year. Now we've been doing events for the Fit Expo training. We were doing Friday and Saturday and splitting it up 3 events each and then actually lifting. What I would do is lift Monday squat, Wednesday deadlift, Tuesday I would press, and then Thursday off, and then I would do a light deadlift during the week and a heavy deadlift, the deadlift set up for the Fit Expo on Friday or Saturday, or I do vice versa. I do heavy full range deadlifts and do lighter, shorter range deadlifts. But usually, honestly, a lot of it goes by feel. If I totally destroy myself on a good squat session, you know, I might have to lighten up the next week. But my basic rule is usually to try and get at least, you know, one squat and deadlift session in, and one pressing session, maybe two. We always press on the weekends. And I've honestly switched it every year, and I couldn't tell you which one works better because usually my lifts keep on going up. But it really depends on the contest. If you have a deadlift in it, then sometimes I try and deadlift twice a week, just one light session, one heavy session. And the squats then are thrown in, either band work or box squats, depending on, you know, how I'm feeling, how I'm recovering. That's a big factor as well. If I'm recovering pretty good, I'm not too beat up, I'll throw more weight on. If I'm not, I'll back it off and do more, you know, active recovery stuff like foam rolling and stretching and get massages and stuff like that.
Well, and you brought up training for the Fit Expo. I thought I originally saw your name on the competitors list.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what happened there?
Yeah, I wasn't too happy about that. I was signed up. I was ready to go. I was actually looking forward to it because the events, you know, I was happy about the events except for that, you know, death medley carry event with, you know, all that heavy stuff. But, yeah, about, I think it was 4 weeks out, we were doing yokes, and we just had gotten replicas made of the old IFSA now Super Series equipment. But the, you know, it's not stainless steel, it's steel. But trying to figure out that stuff, it's a little bit different feel than our old yoke. And I was trying to accelerate too fast in our 40-foot, you know, space. And we were doing four runs to make up the distance of the, you know, the full course at the Fit Expo. And I think, like, the third run down, tried to push off way too fast, and I actually tore my soleus. In my calf. So I got an MRI. They said, yep, you tore it in the muscle. No surgery's needed, but I think they said I, you know, tore enough of it that if I tried to compete, I'd probably rip the rest of my calf off and have surgery. So I wasn't happy about that, but, you know, I've went through, you know, one major surgery already. I was like, you know, I don't need to go through another one if I can get away with, you know, just giving this a couple months to heal up and getting back to full strength, I'll be a lot more happy than having to go through 6 months.
And not that any muscle tears feel good, but I would imagine anything in the calf region would be pretty bad because it's a constant ache, you know, every time you go to walk. I mean, is my thought process correct in that?
Oh, yeah. You know, with my chest tear, that didn't hurt at all. The calf, feels like someone pretty much hit you with a baseball bat, pretty much. And then I think for about 2 weeks, I couldn't walk. And then by the time I got to the Fit Expo, I was limping a little, but with all the active recovery and seeing my physical therapist and doing, you know, icing 8-9 times a day, stretching, I've gotten it back to now I'm walking normal, and I actually started training last weekend, just real light, and hopefully in about the next, I would say 2 months, I should be back to full competition strength if everything goes well. But I was disappointed because both my brothers, you know, signed up for it.
Right.
They're both lightweight pros, and it was something that, you know, re-sparked the training because we were all kind of slacking off a little bit. And it was then the first time I think all three of us competed together since we all turned pro. And so I was looking forward to that. It would have been a lot of fun, but. Yeah, I said, well, we'll train for next year and we can do it again.
And what's going to be the next, I guess, contest that you're eyeing at this point as far as when you're coming back from the injury? What's kind of the next thing you think, okay, I think that's the one I'm going in?
Well, there's supposedly going to be a team contest in Chicago in April that they're setting up. They're just finalizing all the sponsors right now, and we're actually going to be supplying the equipment since it's so close. And I think it's going to be Russia versus Poland versus USA. And now it's going to be me, Travis, Kevin, and possibly Brian Shaw against, I don't know who's all on the Polish team or Russia team, but it'll be pretty good. It's going to be a one-day event. I think first place is 5,000. And then all the athletes get paid just to show up. So that'll be a fun time to see everyone. Those team contests actually are a lot of fun. And then after that, some demonstrations in South America. And then hopefully the Super Series, I think they're supposed to start up in May. got to talk to Odin and see if I've got to requalify or if I'll get a shot at one of those. So.
Well, and we're getting towards the end, and I kind of have a question that's a little off topic, I guess you would say. It really has nothing to do with training, really.
Yeah.
You know, in doing research for this show, I kind of found that there's not a ton of information about you out on the web, you know, not on Marunde Muscle, not, you know, there's a small Wikipedia page. And I was just kind of curious, you know, is this by your design? Do you like to kind of keep the low profile? Or, in your opinion, is that kind of just show the state of strongman and how it, you know, doesn't publicize itself? Because, I mean, you're one of the top guys in the world, but there's not a lot of info out on you.
No, I mean, and that's the thing, I'm pretty quiet, I guess, by nature, unless you know me. I don't make any effort to put more information out there, at least not yet. Because for me, you know, strongman was really something to prove to myself. I'm not saying it's not for fans, but I didn't get into it for any fame. I mean, honestly, my first goal was turn pro, and I did that in my second contest, I think. And then after that, I've just been, you know, honestly happy. You know, I've never really set the goal of, I guess, winning World Strongest Man. I'm sure a lot of guys will say, what the hell? I'm a realist. I know where I'm at. I know what I'm capable of. I know I can do better in the finals if I train for it. And I definitely want to do better. But I also train with some of the best in the world. I mean, train with Brian Shaw. You know, if he doesn't have any screw-ups next year, I can guarantee you he's going to win. He's just that good. And it pushes me to get better, but, for me, just making it to the world as many times as I did, making the finals twice, I couldn't be happier. And I want to be able to keep doing the sport as long as I can, because I find it fun. And I always say, when it stops being fun, I'll stop doing it. So, I mean, I know some guys are more, have more of a personality or more charisma, and they really want to see what they can get out of the sport. And I know you guys have talked about this probably before, but, you know, strongman's kind of a niche sport. I think it'll definitely grow, but, you know, as far as it being, like, as big as the NFL, I don't think that, you know, is honestly going to happen.
And it sounds like you're kind of in it for the right reasons. I mean, if anyone is in the sport, I mean, there's nothing wrong with promoting yourself. Shit, that's what I'm doing, being on this show. But if you're in the sport to get fortune and fame, you're in the wrong damn sport. It's just that simple.
That's for sure. I mean,
you really have to be in it because you want to be in the sport. You want to do it for yourself, and you have to have goals for yourself, because that, you know, $100,000 paycheck at the end of the contest ain't there.
No, it's not. And, I honestly think I've been pretty lucky and pretty fortunate because, I mean, I get to train with my brothers every weekend. You know, I get to see my family all the time. My brothers have the same interest. You know, a lot of the people that train with me have the same interest. You know, and around my town, everyone knows who I am and what I do. So, to me, that's, you know, good enough. My biggest goal is just to keep on getting better and more efficient at what I'm doing. And if I can help a few people along the way get better at it or get stronger, just in general, you know, to me, that's enough.
Well, Jason, we really appreciate you coming on tonight. Is there any sponsors or your website or anything like that you'd like to tell the fans about before we let you go for the night?
Oh, yeah, we did start up a strongman company, me and my brothers. It's called Wisconsin Strongman, and it's wistrongman.com. Really, we're doing it just for the local community. We put on demonstrations. This will be our second summer, and we do a lot of festivals. We raise a lot of money for charities, big and small, and it's a way for us to show everyone what we do with our training crew, and it's, you know, we do reasonable weights, but not enough to really hurt ourselves, but enough to put on a good show, and it's a way for us to, you know, kind of give back a little bit, and it's a way for us to have another reason to train as hard as we do. If we can't always, you know, get to the contest, we've got, usually I think this summer we'll have four or five demonstrations lined up. So that's we're just starting it up. So the website has some videos and information, but it'll get a lot more on it as summer comes up.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. And what was the website one more time?
It was wistrongman.com.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we'll have to check that out for you. Well, once again, Jason, we really appreciate you coming on. You know, it's I thought it was a great interview. I mean, I wasn't sure what to expect because I've never talked to you in person before, but, you know, I didn't know how lively you were or anything like that. But, I think the fans will come away with a lot of good information about you.
Absolutely. Yeah. That sounds good.
Well, thanks again for coming on, Jason. We really appreciate it, buddy. And even though, you know, you're not necessarily that much into the watching of the football, go ahead and continue to enjoy the festivities there that I know are happening in Green Bay around that Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. I'll try. All right. Sounds good talking to you guys.
Good night, Jason.
Thank you, Jason.
And we'll be back right after this commercial break to wrap up the show.
This is the RX Power Hour. Redline Ultra Hardcore is scientifically formulated with a patented tri-action liquid and micro-tab delivery system designed to deliver hardcore fat-burning actives into the body in as little as 45 seconds and lasts for hours. This makes Redline Ultra Hardcore the fastest-acting, strongest-stacking, longest-lasting fat burner ever assembled. You are hardcore. That's why you need Redline Ultra Hardcore. Visit VPXSports.com today for a free sample of Ultra Hardcore. Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit SpeciesNutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. Species Nutrition.com. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise, up-to-the-minute news, and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Now back to the RX Power Hour.
Welcome back to the RX Power Hour on RxMuscle.com with your hosts Nathan Payton and Ryan Bracewell. Ryan, definitely a great interview with Jason.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm really pleased with it. You know, kind of like I told him, I had no idea what to expect. I didn't know if he was going to be real quiet and kind of give us the one-word short answers or if he would kind of open up and talk to us like some of our other guests. So I was very pleased with it. He actually, not actually, I mean, I didn't know him, but he seemed very easy to talk to and, you know, very open about all of his stuff, you know, real cool.
Yeah, he had a lot of great, useful training tips, and especially when it comes to the kind of the shin splint issues and working up to speed, you know, on a lot of those moving events. I thought he had some really good information there on how to graduate up to that.
Yeah, and I think it kind of gives, I think you mentioned it earlier, it kind of gives hope for some of the guys who aren't 6'8", you know, or 6'4". You know, even guys like myself who are only six, you know, I'm a short 6'1", you know, I'm still taller than he is, but odds are I don't want to be 350 pounds, you know what I mean? I'd rather be 280, you know, be a little bit heavier than him maybe, but considerably it'd be about the same amount of muscle, you know, because he's so jacked. And so it's nice to hear from someone who, even though he obviously has the genetics for strength, he's not just some natural-born mass monster, you know. And so I think what he does can apply to a lot bigger audience than someone like a Terry Hollins would, you know. I mean, not to say that people wouldn't want to hear what he does, but it just has more applicability to everyone else.
Oh, I completely agree. You know, and as the sport continues to evolve every year, and you and I have talked definitely at length as far as how the events and the contests, you know, they're really mixing it up these days. I mean, it's so much of those static-oriented contests, really pretty much with the exception of the Arnold, just aren't really out there. They're a big mix of the static and then the moving type of events. And, you know, it's not no more, you know, the who's going to live, you know, the max last man standing type of a thing. So much more now with the, you know, most reps and keep going up in weight as well. So, He definitely is a, I don't know if you call it like the new generation of guys coming up, but he's kind of an alternative generation, if you will, of guys that are earning their pro cards and coming up through that amateur ranks, you know, who, yeah, I mean, there's just not that many genetic Brian Shaws out there, or Terry Hollins, if you will, you know, of that stature. And it's just great to see everybody, no matter what kind of they're born with, you know, if they work at it, you know, and they get the right group of guys around them, which every guest, if you noticed, has made that a key element. You know, it's the group of guys that they're with is why that they continue to progress so much. So it's definitely interesting. You know, each week we seem to learn something new, and this week was certainly no exception.
Well, and I don't know if you meant it to sound this way or not, but he's actually been around for a while. I mean, he got his pro card in 2005. So I wouldn't say he's the new generation. He's almost the template for what a lot of guys like, say, Matt Dawson are doing. You know, they're not just focusing on gaining weight and getting bigger. They're focusing on being lean and being strong and being agile. You know,
right.
You know, him and Kevin Nee kind of, I think, started that trend.
Yeah.
I
completely agree.
You still need to pack on the muscle. I mean, there's no doubt. You can't be 240, but they're not trying to be that 340-pound guy that, you know, is, they're not fat, but they're holding more body fat and everything else. They're trying to stay as fast and, you know, as strong as possible.
Right. And you know, and what I meant by that comment is basically that, you know, as the young guys, I guess everybody has role models, you know, and as the young guys and the amateurs are kind of trying to associate with who they're most like, or, you know, the 5'10" guy isn't going to say, oh, I'm going to go after all those Brian Shaw lifts. That's probably not going to work out so well in the long run. You know, even if they give it their all, their body may fail. I don't think it's going to hang in there for them. You know, but it's cool, like you said, the template, if you will. You know, they can kind of pick and choose. They can look at the Jasons or the Travises or yourself or Derek or you know, or the Brian Shaw, you know, kind of figure out, like, who am I kind of like? You know, what's my structure like?
Well,
and then kind of
go
with some of this information, you know?
Yeah, and not only that, it gives them hope that they can compete with those big guys, you know, because I've had people come to me and basically say, you know, they're maybe my size roughly, you know, they're 6'1", 6'2", 290, 300 pounds, and they tell me, you know, what's the point in continuing in strongman? I can't compete with Brian Shaw. But you sit there and you look at a guy like Bergman, and
exactly,
if you see just some of the things on YouTube that I saw today, you know, there was a competition, I couldn't tell you the year because it didn't have it listed on there, but he's doing Atlas Stones on the old IFSA circle, but he was doing it as part of the Super Series, and he beat Terry Hollins on the stones, okay?
Wow.
So that's a guy who's 6'8". Then you look at some of these other events like Single Fingers, you know, on World's Strongest Man, he's probably the shortest guy doing the event, and yeah, he may not beat Brian Shaw on Single Fingers, but he's beaten a lot of other guys that are 6'5", that are 6'4", guys that can't get all of the fingers, and I think it might have been the last time he made the finals 2 years ago, I think he got all of them. If not all of them, he got all but one. You know, and he's just bullying it up where these guys have a foot advantage on him. He's literally got it on his shoulder, just driving his legs like a football player into a pad and just pushing this 700-pound or whatever it is thing over. You know, it's pretty impressive, you know.
Oh, I completely agree. And he was a great guest. I got to admit, I was a little nervous after the Packers won last night. I was like, uh-oh. Knowing that he lived in Wisconsin, I was like, oh, boy, what kind of a shape, what kind of celebration is going to be going on up there? So it was nice to see that he was perfectly intact.
Well, I kind of figured he'd be okay because I've come to find that most strongmen aren't that, you know, obsessed with football. I mean, you have guys that watch it, like myself or even Andy Vincent, but they don't obsess about it like everyone else, because most of them are more concerned with when's World's Strongest Man going to be on TV than they are football.
Right, right.
I mean, I was definitely glued to the TV, but I didn't really care who won or, you know, unless it was maybe the Texans, I guess I might have gotten drunk, but, you know, that's okay. But that ain't going to happen for a while.
And that's interesting that you bring that up, though, because so many of the guys have that pretty established football background. A lot of these guys are coming from a well-collegiate background or, you know, even a pro background to an extent. And it's interesting because you're right. The theme is pretty consistent where it's almost like they've, a strongman has just interested them far more, and they just kind of move on.
Well, yeah, and some of the guys, like he said, he'd rather be playing football than watching it. It's kind of the same thing with Andy Vincent. You know, I'd call him up and be like, man, did you see this game? And he's like, nah, I don't care. And I'm like, how can you not care? It's like, you know, he's like, once you've been there, you don't care anymore. You know, it just kind of burns you out on the whole thing.
Right. I can do that.
Well, man, I think that was a great show. You know, I hope all of our listeners like it. I do think we'll get some good you know, numbers off of this one, because Jason doesn't do a lot of interviews, and kind of like I told him, you know, there's not a lot of information out there on him, so I think this was a great chance for people to, you know, kind of pick his brain, or for us to pick his brain for people.
I completely agree, yeah, completely. And another little tip for people out there as far as training goes, new Motorhead album comes out tomorrow, February 8th, so that's always useful for training. Just thought I'd put that out there.
the music guru. Well, that sounds great, Nathan. You know, I can't wait till next week, and you know, we got a couple good guests lined up for the near future, but everybody listening, you'll just have to wait to find out. So we'll be back next week. This is Ryan Bracewell and Nathan Payton with RX Power Hour on rxmuscle.com.
The RX Power Hour is a presentation of rxmuscle.com. Tune in next week at the same time for another edition with Ryan Bracewell and Nathan Payton, only on RxMuscle.com.